Welcome to a special episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. On this episode, the guys sit down with distillers from Balcones Distillery out of Waco, Texas, in order to give you an exclusive tasting experience of Balcones whiskeys, all while giving real-time rock ratings for all the whiskeys that they try. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks, powered by Living in Colorado, The Mile High Perspective on YouTube, and Fathom Realty, as well as Keller Williams downtown. We are out here at the Rouge Wine and Bourbon Bistro in Greenwood Village, as always, our beautiful sponsor here. And guys, today we have a special episode for you. We talk about all the time how the Rouge gives us amazing opportunities to drink bourbon, meet great people in that space. And today we have a perfect example of that. So we are here today, and what we're going to be doing for you is we're going to be doing a taste and go through Balcones. They are a company from down in Texas, and they were awesome enough to not only come here with us, but brave the snow. Guys, there's literally 8 inches of snow on the ground today. And
yeah, what is that?
They still made it out.
It's ice. You just go pack it in a cup, put some stuff on it, and just eat it.
Put whiskey on it.
Sounds like a great food truck idea.
No ice, maybe. Just our own natural ice.
But as always, guys, my name is Charlie Sardelli, and I'm here with
Jameson Amoros,
Oscar Barra.
And our special guest today from Balcones is his name is Alex, and he actually travels the country with the company, teaching people about the bourbon, doing tasting. So Alex, can you go ahead and introduce yourself for me?
Thanks for having me. Yeah. My name is Alex. I've been with Balcones for just over 8 years now, which is almost, I guess, half the life of the distillery. The distillery just celebrated 16 years.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
That's awesome. And you dressed the part.
Yeah, this a lot of people will ask like if it's a show, and maybe it is, but this is just me.
Yeah.
Charlie, who's hanging out with us too. Also works for Balcones and has for over 7 years. I hired him, stole him away from another gig because I knew him through the grapevine. But Balcones has been producing whiskey for 16 years. I've been there just over eight. So I know a couple things. So hopefully this is fun and educational for all of us too.
Oh, yeah.
When we discuss all things whiskey.
Well, for the Game of Thrones fans, right? I drink and I know things, I think, is going to be the theme for today.
Yeah.
Nice. And for the Yellowstone fans, this man looks like he just got off set.
Yeah.
And again, after my heart, because again, people are like, where are your glasses and my prescriptions?
Bro, I love the iconic
looks.
That's
what I do, right?
You know what I mean? Like, everybody's got to have an iconic look.
It's kind of intimidating.
You guys nailed it.
in a fun way.
Hint, Oscar?
Well, with the glasses. Earlier, he was not intimidating. But he put them on, and now it's
intimidating. We've tried to cut back on the whole he's part of the drug cartel talk lately. But
The real estate cartel.
Exactly.
The drug cartel.
Exactly.
Right.
But guys, as always, like I said, this is a little bit more of a special episode. You know, we love to give you kind of like the background, the history on our bourbons, and teach you a little bit about them while we're sipping through them. But since we can have it right from the specialist himself, we're basically just going to kind of sip through them and talk about it. And before anybody says anything, Alex knows that he's stepping up here. He's sitting here with us, and we're going to do an honest review. Now,
it's the hot seat,
baby. Yep. That doesn't mean that we're planning on giving it a bad review, a good review, no matter what it is. Just know that we're going to give you our honest opinion. But on front of that, this is our honest opinion. We've been drinking. This is going to be 73, 74, 75, 70. And 76 bourbons on this podcast.
Oh, my God.
That sounds so much worse.
73, 76. I was like, wait a minute. We're just going to jump into one, two.
Yep.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I had a big breakfast, so I'm ready for it.
So to all our listeners, everybody that you know, come to trust us on our reviews, know that will not stop. And we're excited to drink through these and learn from them, because at the end of the day, we always say the conversation while you're sipping on bourbon adds even more to it.
Sure.
So, and Alex, thank you for coming out.
Thank you.
I mean, about the whole review thing, first thing I did was, hey, what is up with your Rumble? I had a bottle from them I thought him and Charlie were going to kick my ass because I was questioning their stuff. But no, he educated on me and it made 100% sense. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I'm excited to go back home and try it the way it was supposed to be.
Well, and for us, Charlie, correct me if I'm wrong, I've never tasted any of these.
None.
I've never had any of these.
And
you've
not. Yep. So
no. So this is all fresh.
Yeah, complete fresh. Blank cool. slate fresh.
Yep.
Do That's we want to go through kind of the history of Balcones?
Sure.
And
yeah.
What makes you guys different?
I will say the one thing that hopefully we all walk away with when it comes to maybe specifically us, you know, myself, Charlie, but Balcones, is that we know we're navigating through a really crowded and diverse space, which is really exciting for the world of whiskey, right? There's never been a better time to be in the spirits industry, specifically the aged, you know, spirit industry whiskey market. And so it's not lost on us that not everybody's going to love our whiskey, and that's okay. I think the beauty of this industry is being able to be educated mm-hmm. and dig in and find what you like and know it, but also having the willingness to explore mm-hmm. new spirit types, new distilleries, whether they're local, whether they're from afar. And so educational opportunities to us are really fun. And if someone's like, you know what, I don't know if I really like that, but that's okay. At least you now know maybe mm-hmm. why you don't like it,
right?
Versus, you know, trying something and being like, man, it's bad. You're like, well, do you know why it's bad to you? It's just, I don't like it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's not that fun. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can be educated on it, right, maybe you'll know more, you'll be more empowered to then go back out in the world, try a different style, a different type of whiskey, and then maybe feel more empowered to try other things. Right. I think that's like the fun of this whole game. If you will.
And you're true on the fact that it's almost like fighting up a hill, right?
Sure.
Because bourbon before the expanse happened, and let's say, be honest with you, it's within the last 5 to 10 years that it's really been taking off to the point where, hey, we're going to try different things, we're going to have different mm-hmm. things. But the beauty of being able to taste across it mm-hmm. is amazing. And when I say it's a mountain that you're facing, is because I know a lot of the people that I talk to that are bourbon drinkers from over 10 years ago, I'm a bourbon drinker. If it don't burn it, I don't want it. You know,
sure.
And it's almost as if there's a pushback to having these changes done. But from what we've experienced, everything that companies like yours are trying, different companies are trying, mm-hmm. is only adding to the research mm-hmm. that's going to make bourbon better.
Yeah, yeah. Iron sharpens iron, right? And it's going to dismantle a lot of preconceived notions. But then we saw it with the beer, right? The beer, craft beer boom and mm-hmm. the beer industry right now. We're seeing a lot of the big players kind of say like, hey, there's a moment, there's a movement. It's not going anywhere. There are things to be learned with a craft movement, right? And so I think we're adding to that. And these whiskeys, along with some of the other whiskeys that we produce, I believe are doing that. And so kind of stepping into history relates immediately to this first pour that we'll look at, and that is Baby Blue.
Okay, I'll go ahead and pour it out while you talk about
brilliant.
It.
Yeah, brilliant, yeah. So Balcones was founded in 2008 in Central Texas, in Waco, which is about halfway between Dallas and Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And really from day one, the concept centered around the idea of wanting just to make the best whiskey possible. Nobody else was making whiskey. There's no tradition. There's no history. We all know that there's long-standing tradition and history in Scotland. I'm going to name the two biggest prominent areas, right? Scotland, and then in American tradition would be Kentucky, right?
Right.
And so really we set out from the very beginning to try to make the best whiskey possible. We've never made gin or vodka. It's always been, we've been fortunate enough to have exclusively the ability to aim for just whiskey, which is awesome. We've had a pretty narrow focus on whiskey. But really, it was all centered around the concept of wanting to make single malt, right? Mm-hmm. So I know we've used the B word a lot, but there's no bourbon on the table today.
Yep.
We are exclusively looking at corn whiskey, two single malts, and then a rye whiskey. And we'll kind of unpack a little bit more about those things as we saunter through these pours on this chilly day. But
I love it. This is, you were made for this.
Yeah. This is actually the first legal Texas whiskey that was sold post prohibition.
Wow.
It's kind of profound, right?
Yeah.
But again, nobody was
in
nobody
2008
was
because there's no, distillery.
We launched it in 2009, but there were a couple other distilleries.
Yeah.
There was a couple rum producers. Nobody was producing and releasing whiskey. No, not at all. And so again, there was no tradition, but we fell in love with the world of single malt. And so nobody else is doing this. Let's try it. Right. And so while we were waiting on some specialized equipment to come in, because we needed a mash tun in order to produce single malt, which is different than your American whiskey tradition of producing mm-hmm. through a cereal cooker, synonymous with Kentucky style mm-hmm. Or really any American whiskey tradition. We wanted to play with something that we knew was available. And that was part of, we were talking about like the culinary side of things. And so Baby Blue came to fruition because it's made with 100% Texas grown and roasted blue corn. So not white or yellow, which is usually a commodity grain that most people know of from the world of bourbon. There's nothing wrong with that. But we had an opportunity to dig in with something that's a little smaller, closer to home. And so this is actually 100% Texas blue corn, right?
Okay.
Hence the name Baby Blue. But again, you have to think about all of these whiskeys looking through the lens of a single malt producer.
Mm-hmm.
And so we specialize in a double batch copper pot distillation, which is extremely abnormal for the world of American whiskey production. That would be more similar to what you would maybe see if you went to a Scotch producer, right? Yeah, in Scotland.
What, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I was going to say. When we did it, we had, who do we have here? Olinger or
Olforster?
No, the single malt, the
They did the,
oh yeah,
and the they event. Were the same thing. They were doing that, the copper pot distilling. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Copper and pot distillation. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And it, oh, it wow. definitely, so it's very different.
Yeah, well, very, tell very me, different. Yep. What is blue corn a little sweeter? Is it what's the why'd you lean towards it?
Well, again, coming from kind of a Venn diagram of, it was something that we could find and we could get closer to a farm instead of it just being like a vendor resource, right? We weren't on some sort of an online platform looking for just like, how do we make a quick buck? Yeah. We really have always had this mentality of wanting to use the best grains possible that we could find and specialize in techniques maybe that have fallen to the wayside. But through our own research and kind of our head down as a bit of DIYers and crafts people, mm-hmm. as crafts like makers, really just wanted to, again, produce the best whiskey possible, without the distractions of trying to copy something else that was awesome. Out there. And so the byproduct was something really unique, and kind of pioneering the concept of blue corn whiskey on a larger scale. But again, you have to remember and look through that this is a corn whiskey, but the really kind of subtle nuance is that if you think about it through the lens again of a single malt producer in the old world style, this would actually be very similar to a single grain whiskey. Mm-hmm. That you would maybe find in the old world. Single grains are actually a larger percentage of consumption in the old world, like Scotland, Europe, yep. the UK, maybe more so than single malts or even blended scotches, right? So in American terms, when you look at the TTB regulations, this falls into a corn whiskey category. So there's a lot of familiarity there. We wanted to honor and respect the tradition, but elevate it. So using a much higher quality, it is sweeter. Mm-hmm. All of our whiskeys tend to be a little bit sweeter. That's not because we have any additives. There's zero additives, no coloring, no sugar. That's just because of really high quality grain, mm-hmm. really, really great fermentations, really great high quality casks or barrels, right? And then a fantastic distillation system. We don't chill filter. So there's a lot of density. There's a lot of richness and oils that are left behind in a good way. So you end up with like a meatier spirit that has a lot more gumption to it.
I'm excited because even just getting my nose in it, and it's funny that you say that because as far as it being closer to like a scotch, I can almost get that on the nose immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Very earthy.
Yeah. I don't want to say flat has a negative connotation to it, but it's not this, oh man, if you smelt scotch, if you know that grainy,
you just came back from there. So.
Yeah. And exactly. So that's, and it's, you get your nose in it.
But it's like a peaty, and then it goes into like more of the alcohol.
Yeah, more, and a little sweetness on the back end. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And just, you know, obviously folks can't join us. Maybe next time.
Go ahead and buy some.
None of these are peated, right? So yeah. A lot of maybe what you're picking up is, you picked it out, right? Is one thing we've always wanted to do is to respect the base grain. Mm-hmm. Is instead of, sometimes you can see people trying to rush through fermentation, yeah. or sometimes they're just like, we just need corn. We know corn goes in the mash bill. It needs to be 51%, right, to be bourbon. Corn whiskey, 81% or higher, 80% higher, whatever. Mm-hmm. This is 100%, and we know we're sticking our necks out because we want you to see and to feel, right, literally, but also experience the grain. We're not going to bury it in a bunch of oak. So this is actually exclusively in used American oak. So okay. It truly is showcasing that grain. It's not meant to be overthought. It is just 2 years old too. So it's a pretty youthful spirit, 2 to 3 years old as far as when we're blending casks in the blending room. But it's a very unadulterated, really fun, grain forward corn whiskey.
I love the color of it. Yeah. It's so synonymous with whiskeys that lean more towards that grain, just focusing on the grain, that there's more clarity to it. It's a lighter color. And even I haven't tasted it yet, but just looking at it, and we do this all the time, is you can actually see like the legs are a little more heavy, like you were saying.
Yep.
It's a little more oily.
It has like almost like a amber beer color to it, though.
It's pretty mm-hmm. cool.
Yeah. It is. And, all right. It sounds to me like you went with a traditional unadulterated way, mm-hmm. without reinventing the wheel, but still giving it your own flair to stand out. Sure. And again, American whiskeys, it'll kick your butt. I've had two, one from Wyoming and one from here, J.D. Laws in town, 100% corn. Mm-hmm. It's different. It's a different animal.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah. It's not a very popular category at all. And that's okay. It's kind of been, it's a little ironic in that it still has so much momentum behind Baby Blue, because we've been producing it for a long time. We've won World's Best Corn Whiskey 5 or 6 times throughout the years. And it continues to have momentum. Granted, part of that might be the price point, right? It's sub $40, or it's right around $40. Like, you know, if you go to the store, that kind of thing. So it's still relatively affordable.
And it's accessible.
Yeah, it's 92 proof too, so it's got a little more gumption to it. Like you could put this on ice and drink it. It will make a decent to really good cocktail, but it's really fun to always try it neat.
I'm gonna get it. I'm gonna get the first tasting. Cheers, gentlemen.
Cheers. I didn't step too much into, so a little more about, we were talking about the name Balcones, right? So we were founded on the concept and the idea of, right, like thinking about and paying homage to this single malt tradition. So we wanted to name ourselves after the place rather than a person. Not that there's anything wrong with that, right? But if you think about the American whiskey tradition, right, you think about maybe Jim Beam or Bullet, right? Tom Bullet, Jack Daniels, things like this are named after maybe someone, a figurehead or, I don't know, master distiller or something. There's nothing wrong with that tradition. But we wanted to kind of, people are extremely important within our organization, but we kind of want to divorce ourselves from this idea of having like this hierarchical system of like there's this one end all be all human, you know, person. Even though, again, human element is very important. That said, we wanted to kind of look at this opportunity of our surroundings. And so there's actually a plate tectonic system. It's dormant. And so it's actually an escarpment. We've always considered a fault line. That's the easiest way to describe it. But it's actually called the Balcones fault line. Because what happened was a long time ago, the Spaniards were in Texas before it became Texas, right? And they came upon this area where there's these really large cliffs or these bluffs. And when you get to it, they said, it looks like a balcony, right? Balcones, right? And so there's a,
I like it.
Through central Texas, there's a lot of Balcones based entities, a lot of recycling plants, a lot of historical sites, parks, especially down through Austin and into San Antonio. But we're at the most northern tip of that Balcones escarpment. So we wanted to name ourselves after something that was local. A place, you know, that sense of provenance, location, rather than a person.
Which,
I guess it's a very permanent place.
Right.
Like, theoretically, a very permanent place. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I guess it never hit me that, you know, they don't distill in Texas. And, you know, that's crazy.
There was no tradition for it.
You would think, you know, it's Texas.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I say that, right? But now, I don't know, we have 20, 30, 40 whiskey distilleries now. Some more popular than others. Some that are, you know, sticking to local only. It's been really cool to see that flourish, right? We're not gatekeepers by any means. We're not trying to throttle that. We don't need to be the best. We don't need to be the ones that are only succeeding, right? There's a lot of really fantastic producers. And so that was really cool to see back in 2016 or so, the Texas Whiskey Trail became a prominent entity. So you can now actually visit Texas and go visit a lot of producers, some that distribute far and wide, some that are local and small, some that focus now or in the origins on rum as well. We produce a little bit of rum, but most folks are, of course, on that trail. Texas Whiskey Trail is exclusively whiskey, right? But if you look on the back of our bottles, you can see certified Texas whiskey. So there's this really cool movement happening, and it's flourishing and exploding, some might say, where you're seeing almost like a subcategory within America really taking off, and that is certified Texas whiskey.
I love it.
We had a special order. We named my daughter Eleonora, and there's an Eleanor bourbon out there.
Yeah, that's Texas. From.
And we had to have someone purchase it there and send it to us.
Yeah, that's. This is so bad. This is slipping my mind. Anyways,
it was good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so. Guys, I want to hear, we kind of all got our first sips in. We heard a little bit about the history, a little bit about the name. So I want to get your input. Jameson, I'm going to start with you. How you feeling? What are you thinking?
You know, I was trying to think back as I was tasting this, the last time I had 100% corn whiskey, and I don't know if I ever have. So it's very different. I think the first thing that stands out to me is the nose versus the taste, completely different.
Yeah.
Like, I get the earth, peaty kind of, not charred because it's only 2 years old, but just that really, like you were saying, very heavy feel in the nose. But when I drink it, it's sweet first. It does sit on the tongue.
How light it was.
Right.
On the tongue.
Yes.
That's what got me.
Yeah.
I did not expect it. from the legs of it, the look of it, how you explained it, I didn't expect it to be so light on my tongue as far as the feeling of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then for me, whenever I was sipping it, it was, I love how you get the flavor up front, it like right away, and then it kind of, it lets it settle at the back end and then sits a little sweeter. So it wasn't as, I don't want to say grainy. I don't want to say grainy, but there wasn't a lot of texture to it. I expected a lot more texture being
based on the nose, right?
Yeah. I have had 100% corn, and it was good. You know, my favorite, it was too in your face.
I like gumption. That's a good,
and yeah. This was, this was not,
I really do like that.
I was bracing myself again. Yeah. I've only had two, one from Wyoming, one from JD Laws. And they weren't my favorite. I still have, and I got the JD Laws a long time ago, and I still have some. That's how much.
For everybody listening, he means 80 Laws. I think JD is the cousin.
Yeah, 80 Laws. Sorry. 80 Laws over on Acoma Street. Anyway.
Yeah. You watched too much of the election last night. That's what happened.
I was up late.
The spice that's in there is pretty good, too.
So I got to tell you, the flavor that I'm picking up is almost like a chili, like a jalapeno without the spice. That's kind of the flavor that I'm getting out of it. And it's very light and like wet kind of.
Mm-hmm.
The
sweetness is sitting on the, which is odd.
Good.
Tell me if this is how it's supposed to be, but the sweetness, instead of sitting at the back of my tongue,
it's on the front.
It's right on the tongue.
Yeah.
It's like right at the tip.
Yeah.
So it's earthy.
Almost, almost like as you're breathing in, it's almost like a, oh, hi. Like you're getting that sweetness up front.
Yeah.
But then the burn that you get from it, it's not like a punch you in the face burn. It's almost like, the flavor comes in first. You get the sweetness. You get the flavor, and then it just kind of spreads across your tongue and sits on the outside. Of it.
Because it is 92 proof, and again, our spirits are a lot oilier, right? Because of that pot distillation, are a lot oilier, so they tend to hang around, and we don't chill filter, right? So we're not locking essentially freezing them and then stripping them out, right? We're allowing it to be part of the entire experience. Is that you have a nice like robust sweetness, and then as that ethanol kind of kicks in, it evaporates. To me, a lot more of the grain character does kind of come in, and you get a little bit of this like earthy almost agave kind of quality to it. Which, if you think about it from the perspective of like the cousin to maybe Texas whiskey, right, is the culinary side. When you think about blue corn tortilla chips, blue corn tortillas in general. Yeah. So you kind of, you think about like this this Mexican influence, right? And so we actually, 100%. We do love tequila and agave spirits. And so we kind of blend a little bit towards that to bring out some of the earthiness to showcase the corn.
So it borders more on the side of a mezcal. Versus,
You know how the mezcal goes into that extreme kind of in your
face. Yeah, it's very smoky.
It gets close, but then it's almost kind of like a, and then it comes back and almost hits you like a willet, you know, the grassy, but doesn't go there either. And it's just,
it's more complimentary.
It complements it well. And it's,
How you say the grain, or the oils.
Yeah.
That 100%.
Yeah.
Because we have not drank a whiskey or a bourbon. To me, that has been this silky.
Right.
Sure.
And that makes so much sense that you have more oils. Yeah. So then it's gonna be softer.
We think a lot about textural, you know, the application of that when drinking. And one, when it's neat, it's obviously it's accentuated because there's nothing to maybe hide behind or cover it. And so then you think about the other side of then like cocktail development is it holds up well to ice. Mm-hmm. But it provides a really drinkable experience.
Yeah.
Right. We tend to see people that are like, man, you said 92 proof for some of our limited releases are a lot higher, right? Like the next whiskey that we'll get into is actually 110 proof. And so people are like, this is way more drinkable. And it's like, well, one, we've been distilling for 16 years. We've kind of figured out how to do the distillation side. Mm-hmm. But that oiliness kind of helps create like a really lovely barrier. Yeah,
and it brings more people in.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, it's a nice texture and an experience that maybe some producers don't think about quite as often, right? And so for us, that's a really important thing that maybe it's a differentiator, but again, we would think that that's how it should be done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's how it's meant to be done, a really nice viscous oily experience with your whiskey instead of it just being a flash in the pan. That to say, there are producers that chill filter that maybe have a very quick and easy drinkable spirit and it's still fantastic, but you're just saying this is what we do.
Well, no, and I'm so glad that you're here for us to do this, and again, thank you for coming, only because it's hearing it from you and hearing you talk about how you want to keep it true, but make it your own.
Sure.
And then how you know that you're coming into a saturated area, right? Mm-hmm. With spirits, a lot of people are doing it. And I can tell the direction with this is definitely, hey, it's open arms. we are who we are. We do it how we do it. And we want you to come and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a beautiful, like, tiptoe into whiskey.
Sure.
Like, somebody who doesn't...
It doesn't taste anything like the other corn that I've had.
For me, this is something that I would give to a friend that was, like, Lauren, that we brought on.
Yep.
She was, you know, she brought a rum cask barrel because she wanted it to be a little sweeter, easier to drink.
Oh, sure.
This one, for me, is exactly that. If you have somebody who's not used to drinking whiskey or bourbon spirits like that, this is a beautiful introduction because you still get the experience of drinking it, but it's not as punch you in the face with the experience.
Yeah. It's a little softer.
Yeah.
A little more forgiving.
It caresses you a little bit more.
Yeah, the notes kind of just, they gently come in.
Yeah.
They're not bam in your face. Yeah. You're going to get what you're going to get.
I love it.
Yeah.
All right. So gentlemen, let's go ahead.
You know what? I was ready to kick that one's butt because I've had some bad.
Yeah. 100%. All right. Well, who wants to take it? Oscar, Jayma, Rock Radio.
Oscar, you start because you've had corn whiskey before. This is the
if
first
I'm comparing it to other, you know, we're not comparing to bourbon. We're
you
other,
can't because it's completely different.
From what I've had, man, this is up there 3.5, at least, if not a solid 3. Because if I'm comparing it to the other whiskeys that are corn, this is in itself in a separate category.
I think I'm right there with you. Specifically, I think I'm going to lean more on the 3.5 side, closer to 4 for me, only because across the board, like I do feel if you were going to bring somebody who's, you know, I'm a Jack Daniels man, I drink, you know, and then they sip this, I think the lightness of it would put them off a little bit.
Sure, yeah.
But for $40, for the experience that you guys are looking for and how you distill it, how you produce it, to me, this is a whiskey that will bring people into the space.
Yeah.
And I'm all for that because we've had people on the podcast, guests on the podcast who they don't want to come on because I don't drink bourbon. I can't handle that. Or they'll take one sip and be like, oh, you get the eyes throughout the podcast. Like, I can't do this.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it over yet?
So yeah, I'm going to sit. Right. I think I'll go with a 3.8 on the blue for me.
Cool.
Jayma, what are you thinking?
I'm going to go with a solid 4. I like it. And I, you know, my palate, I do, and I think part of me is tainted just because of some of the whiskeys and bourbons we've had. Mm-hmm. I favor complexity. And while the nose to me was complex, it mellowed out on the tongue and it was very corn forward, obviously, because it's 100% corn, very sweet. I get the grain. Yeah. I just, there wasn't a ton of evolution between the first and second and third sip type of deal.
Yeah.
But for the price, great. And I agree with you. I think if you want to get into corn, this is also a bourbon or a whiskey, I'm sorry, that you almost have to have the explanation behind it.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah.
To know what you're tasting.
Or have had.
You know what I'm saying?
Some to compare it to.
Correct.
That's why.
Because if you don't.
Compare it to what I've had, this is a different.
Right. Because if you don't, if you never had it, you're kind of going, like me, I was going, man, what am I, like, why is this taste so different than what I was imagining a 100% corn? Mm-hmm. And then once you gave the explanation and how the pot distillation keeps oils and what, now it makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just looking at it from a consumer standpoint. It's tough because you'd either have to have that knowledge to appreciate it, or you're drinking it as, hey, I want to get into corn whiskey and see what it's like.
So and I'm just for I'm your four. Gauging, we've had 0 1s, very little 2s, and some 3.5.
And some 8s.
Oscar. I mean, we've had...
we call it our brown bag episode.
The brown bag episode. Yeah. I got up and put Coke in it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It was horrible.
At least you're still consuming it, I guess, you know, right? Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we got to the point where we actually called the company and yelled at the lady for how shitty her whiskey was.
Oh, no. That's a
poor lady was nice.
All right.
So. We've had some drinks.
For everybody listening, not watching, what we're going to do is we're drinking through four, like we said, 4 different bottles. So I'm going to go ahead and have you introduce the second and single malt. And that's what we're doing as well, guys, is we're putting the single malts in the same glass that way, because we do have rye on the table as well. So we're just to keep the as close to pure.
Yeah.
We keep it in the same glass. So can you go ahead and introduce and talk a little bit about it? Which one's this?
Yeah. So this next these next two are actually what we would call limited releases. And so if you look at the bottles, you'll notice that the two whiskeys that are flanking have black wax seals. These middle two are actually limited releases, so they have gold wax seals. So one way to kind of look at Balcones on the back bar is our core single malts have red wax seals. Our American whiskeys that are core whiskey, right? So available year round, have black wax. But these next two that we're going to get into, they're both single malts, but they're also limited releases. Okay. So we're jumping up in a completely different price point and category. So this is 100% single malt, right? So this is where the rubber meets the road about all that we've been talking about. This is 100%, again, because we want to highlight and showcase grain. This is 100% Golden Promise malted barley in used oak. Okay, so we'll start there, and then we'll continue to unpack more. This is considerably older, but what's lovely about this is that these are so heavily used casks that it still looks relatively similar as far as the visual aspect, right? But it's gonna, I need to grab the glass. It's gonna be a completely different profile because this is single malt. Excuse me.
And hold on. While I got my nose in this, you said this is 110?
Yeah, this is 55% ABV.
All right.
AKA dangerous.
Yeah, the only reason I asked is you said that.
It doesn't. There's no ethanol burn.
No way.
At all.
Yeah, no, it's lovely. It's very powerful. I actually prefer this with a little bit of water, but it's going to be nice that we've got these really nice big glasses. Mm-hmm. It's going to open up a little bit as we're talking, right? Some of that ethanol will continue to evaporate out of the glass, which is not a bad thing necessarily. It's going to soften up a little bit. But again, we wanted to showcase the grain here. We've been using Golden Promise since 2010. And so our flagship Texas One single malt also uses Golden Promise. Golden Promise historically was one of the most popular grain varietals that a lot of the Scotch producers were using, but it's expensive, but it's got a lot of really beautiful flavor. But because we're not a commodity producer, we've been able to stick with it. So not many people, if really anybody, is using Golden Promise anymore. So it's grown and malted in the UK, and then we bring it over, and then we produce everything. We don't malt anything at the distillery. We do mash 100% grain to glass, everything. We have a bottling hall. Wow. We mature on site. We have two 20,000 square foot rick houses that are just outside of city limits. And we do store a few casks on site, which will relate to our next bottle. And we'll talk a little bit more about that.
So did I see correctly? This one is a rosé in a cask. What was it?
So this is unique because you kind of have to dig in a little bit deeper, right? There's, for us, there was an opportunity. We knew that the eclipse that came through, what was it? Was it this year?
It was this year.
The path of totality was right over our distillery. And so we knew that coming down the pipeline a long time ago. And so the cool thing about this is that, to me, you will find this and it'll become more, it'll hit you in a I see it kind of moment. But right, a lot of times you think of like wine finishing, mm-hmm. right? Which is very popular. Yeah. And that's actually rooted in the world of Scotch and single malt production for hundreds of years. But we were in search of fruit in other areas where we could influence from that perspective. We actually have a dual pitch of dry yeast that we're pitching. We actually have an extended fermentation, which is extremely rare in the world of whiskey production. Most producers are probably getting around 48 to 72 hours. They count their fermentation in hours. We actually count ours in days because we have a 7-day fermentation. And what's happening within that time is after 3 days, we produce all the alcohol that we're going to produce, which is about 7 to 10% ABV, maybe. But then from there, we do this really powerful thing where we set it and almost kind of forget it. We monitor it, but we actually have lactobacillus from the local microflora that's all around us that descends upon our fermentation. And that has this acidification of our fermentation that makes the fermentation extremely sour. And we're finding those are really nice precursors to fruit through distillation. So keep that in mind, right? But what we did here is we further leaned into the fermentation and we used red wine and rosé wine yeast to further accentuate all that big juicy red fruit, and you see it come through at the very end. So this is not wine finished.
All I'm gonna say is, if you guys have not had the experience of doing a tasting with the specialist, with somebody mm-hmm. talking about it, please do it, because
the flavor just starts coming out.
As you're talking about it, I took that sip, and as you're talking about it, it's so incredible. The nose, you still keep that same nose that we had on the blue, which was more of that direct grain. Like definitely get that on your nose.
Yep.
But there's a little bit of rose.
Yes, I was gonna say like there's like floral and fruit. Yeah.
Initially I was getting like maple, sugar, but then I was smelling it, kind of got perfumey, kind of melon, cucumber, you know.
Ooh, yeah, vibes, yeah, sure. You know, yeah, absolutely.
And then
hit it, dude. The plum comes through.
Oh yeah.
Grape,
the flavor on the I'm just gonna be real with you. jumping from, if we would have done this first, then gone back to Blue, I think I would have been a little bit more disappointed.
Yes. Oh, you sure?
Yeah.
You but sure?
This one.
Yeah.
As far the complexity of it, mm-hmm. the mouthfeel, everything comes together, and having you explain it as I'm experiencing that.
Yeah.
Is exactly that. Like, it's crazy how you don't get a blend of the flavor. It's one, two, three, four.
Yeah.
Like, and then it comes out.
For me, the ethanol sits on the back of the tongue too. Mm-hmm. So it kind of complements it because it is very sweet forward.
Yes.
But when you have that ethanol in the back, it complements that and it kind of tones it down,
yeah.
But it brings out, like I said, I still get the floral. I get rose, mm-hmm. and I get plum. I get a little bit of cherry. I mm-hmm. get some of that maple that you were talking about.
Yep.
And the spice.
But and a little bit of spice. Yeah. It's,
with me, when you're talking about the dissipation of the ethanol, it kind of starts morphing into like that dry white wine into mm-hmm. the rosé feel.
Mm-hmm.
That's what lingers at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And the fact that this is 110.
Yeah, no, that's okay. So yeah. I got to know what are we looking at? I know this is a special release, but what are we looking at price on this bottle?
So, and one thing that I skipped over and then we'll jump into that is this is called Mirador. So Mirador, my Spanish is not that great, even though I took like 8 years of it and I live in Texas, but
we have a cartel member here. So
yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
with the cartel member. Yeah, yeah, well, if you don't see me tomorrow,
one day I'm going to have them
demonetized.
Bust
yeah. They're going to come over and
I'm going to have them bust through the song.
Like, I told him not to.
Yeah. Off the record.
Right.
So Mirador is kind of akin to our name, right? Balcones Mirador means the one to look or to look. And so for us, this was another opportunity to pay homage to the grain, but then to the makers that have come before us. And we'll discuss that further with the next single malt release as well. But this is around $100 retail. Okay. So $99 retail. It's about 5 years old, a little bit older. It's exclusively in refill casks. So heavily spent casks in order to maintain and showcase that grain. We didn't want to bury it because of all that development and time of us researching and digging deep into finding that fruit with experimental yeast opportunities. We don't want to bury it. And so we really wanted to showcase it. There's a really fun kind of wave and balance mm-hmm. of that fruit to grain,
it is,
to
yes,
that supporting character of the proof.
You know what you're doing
at 110?
Here with this lineup. Through this lineup.
Yeah.
100%. If this, I mean, night and day difference for me.
Sure.
One and two.
Oh, yeah.
Not that we're going to apologize for the fact that it's $100, but we know that that's a price point that not everybody can wander into. But we feel like the powerful thing about this being at 110 is that you could actually stretch this bottle pretty far. You can add quite a bit of water. It's going to hold up well, mm-hmm. right, with all the oil that's in there, all the fruit, all the grain, or on the rocks. And you're going to be able to nurse this bottle for quite a while.
I'm going to be honest. Or, this one, we very regularly, when we have like wine casks or anything that's trying to go out of the norm with a barrel, with wine, whatever it is, we always look at it almost as a gimmick. Mm-hmm. Like, and I have not enjoyed one that has done that. This, when you say, oh, I know it's the price point, like, this is the experience. Mm-hmm. Like this, and again, I'm not saying this because you're sitting here, but this one.
No, because we were going to drill them on purpose because they were like, sitting here. I'm not going to lie.
I mean, no, this one, for me, this one comes out punching mm-hmm. in a way where it's like, I understand the price of the bottle, but this is a totally different experience
mm-hmm.
between the mouthfeel and the oils
mm-hmm.
and then the proofing. Plus the evolution of the flavor mm-hmm. that you get, and to go from such a distinct sweetness to floral to then sitting, for me, it's sitting on that fruity, that plum at the back end.
Yeah,
I'm getting melon cucumber still, it's just lingering.
It's yeah.
like a rosé melon
like
cucumber.
The tannins, like that more what is, I don't want to say basic, like, I can't think of the word. It more consistent
mm-hmm.
with like that tannin that from the skin of the cucumber or the or
that
like
twang, that tart,
exactly, that little tart. That's mm-hmm. what's sitting on the back of my tongue mm-hmm. right now. Yeah. That's awesome.
And again,
I get I see where the cucumber is coming from. Like just that like sweet, like
it's like a light,
juicy, but not fruit juicy. you know what I mean?
Like melon cucumber kind of, you know. And
it's like why I like giving cucumber water.
I like giving
right?
weird,
like,
you know, flavors and smells and stuff. I still think if you were like to walk in or spray your mouth with your cologne and it's like without the crap and you're like, okay, now I smell this all day. That's kind of what this is kind of going to without the nastiness.
Once again,
it's like that
Oscar,
weird.
How's that whiskey? Have you ever sprayed cologne in your mouth? It's very similar to that.
In a good way.
Yeah,
it's weird because it lingers in.
Right there with mm-hmm. you.
It lingers in and you're like, hey.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you. You say,
it has a good way.
You know, you say this one with water, I think. I would just drink this neat.
Yeah, like, you like it
I
as
drink,
is?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Neat.
Even though we've, yeah. I mean, we have a...
I think if you're not used to 110,
yeah.
then maybe you experiment with some yeah. some drops of water yeah, or yeah. something. But, I mean, we've...
Right. Most put of it on ice.
For
nice
us, it, for us, it's adding just like, you know, I don't know, a couple drops of water to like what we poured here.
Yeah.
It softens it a little bit. And to me, you start getting a little more like meringue and some tropical fruit
yeah.
that maybe you weren't experiencing that, that before, which is just, it's like a lovely experience, right? That's yeah. the beauty of, we were talking about cast strength
yeah.
and you having that unadulterated, powerful, which we'll get to in just a second. To where you're able to see the evolution throughout the entire drink, which wow. again is part of that roller coaster that we love, right, about the spirits industry, is being able to experience different, mm-hmm. you know, kind of like different approaches from different angles. So,
no, that honestly, this was, thank you for bringing this one, because I
yeah, so this me, just was, launched yeah. To the market not long ago, and this next that we'll jump into, oh, I guess you need to give your rating.
Yeah,
we
so
do.
I was going to say, you guys go for your rating on it. I'm gonna open the next one.
I'm going to go with a... I'm gonna go with a three, solid three. Love the evolution. Obviously, way different than the baby blue. And this is my taste profile. I do like getting hit in the face a little bit Sorry. When it comes to whiskey, right? And this one is almost like too easy to drink for
yeah,
me,
yeah, yeah.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah.
I just when I'm drinking something 110, I do like to be like, all right, this is 110. But I think the flavor profile is fantastic. And I agree. I like the idea that if you do water it down and you put it on ice for somebody that isn't used to drinking a high proof whiskey, mm-hmm. it'd be a great experience for them.
Yeah. So Jamie, you're sitting at a three?
Yeah.
Oscar?
I think this is, and I know we keep coming back to that cast, that room cast, and it's local. That's what sucks. We rated it. It was bad. This takes you to that through that journey that should have, and it stays and it doesn't get tart or sour. It just it kind of reminds you, hey, this is what you're drinking. I like it. I'll do 3.5. Solid 3.5.
I'm gonna. You guys couldn't tell this one for me. This one blew me away, especially so after
Charlie found
after
his baby. Flu.
Yeah, no, legit. Like this one, for me, it's the evolution of the flavor. The overall experience and the thought that goes into it as far as the oils, the grains and everything. I'm going to go with a 2.7 because I think that the flavor on this, the experience of drinking it in itself. And if you say that it gets even better, if you enhance it in a cocktail or with water, for me, it, like I said, I would drink this neat all day. It's 110 proof.
It's right up your palate too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This is
sweeter.
Your,
there's evolution yeah. to it. So yeah, I'm sitting right there at that 2.7. I love that one.
Cool.
That one's great.
Awesome.
all right. So the next one that we're moving into, what's the name of it, first of all?
Mm-hmm. So this is a little bit of a different beast, but it does relate directly to Mirador, right, which is what we just tasted. And if you notice something, it's similar in shape, but there's a different bottle configuration yeah. here. And so this was actually a limited release that we dropped at the tail end of last year for our 15th anniversary. This is called Catalea, which in Catalan Spanish loosely translates to spyglass. So if you look at the front of the label, there's actually a spyglass on there. And for us, the exploration of this single malt, this is again a single malt, really is this opportunity to kind of your own interpretation of, right, looking through a spyglass, right? Imagine you're on a ship or you're on the coast somewhere. Are you looking out to the future? Are you looking back behind you to find land? And so for us, it's that homage to the makers that have come before us. And what I mean by that is this, again, is 100% Golden Promise single malt, just like Mirador. It spent the first 3 years of its life in heavily used casks, just like Mirador. But then we transferred it to these really large puncheons that we have on site that we hand selected from bodegas in Spain. So this is really like how you would maybe taste heavily finished single malts that would have been made 50, 60, 70 years ago, maybe. So instead of just like simple finishing, this is a heavily finished in old world decommissioned Sherry Solera casks. And actually, if you look on the back of the bottle, I'm going to grab this.
Yeah.
We actually, there's a lot of transparency on our labels about maturation and about how it inspiration and the maturation techniques. And so if you look on the back, just straight up reading from the label, we finished this and had some long 2+ year finishing times in Moscatel, Amontillado Dulce, Oloroso, and Palo Cortado casks. Some of those you may have heard of. Some of those you may have never heard of. Some of these are defunct styles of sherry that don't exist anymore in the world. And they were maybe flavoring sherries that would then go into bigger sherry production. But we liked them so much as is. They had so much dynamic flavor, rich, kind of sulfury compounds, really deep stewed fruit qualities that we felt in a total blend together with that Golden Promise fruit, that it was really powerful. It is very big. It's chewy. It's sticky. This is also 118 proof. So now we're getting close to that cash strength opportunity there. This will still hold up very well. But this is an area where you do have to like sherry because it's intense, it's big, it's robust. And so again, for us, Catalea, Spyglass, this opportunity to kind of look to the old world, to kind of borrow some ideas that have fallen to the wayside because people aren't doing this anymore. Sometimes they'll have a five-year-old release maybe, and then they'll finish it for 6 months. Or in the single malt tradition now, unfortunately, they'll have casks, they pour sherry into them, let it sit for maybe a couple weeks, dump it out. These casks are 80 to 100 years old.
I've never, and again, thank you so much for the description and the depth that you're going into with it. I have never experienced a nose on a whiskey like I am with this. It's almost as if you can, like, the age is coming through on the nose. Mm-hmm. It's hard. Like it is a hard nose.
I was thinking old musty, molasses, almost porty.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Almost like I walked into like an old rick house, like a really. Old
see, I was going to say
before we go
more,
any further.
I was going to say more like the hull of like the Spanish Armada ship,
in
the middle of the Atlantic.
We started this off. You said you were going to say traditional, Texas. I mean, with all due respect. Look like you just got off the Yellowstone set. Man is sharp. He's stressed.
Which also
sharp.
Is nowhere near Texas, but continue.
Montana.
But hey, Western
looking. He's dressed well. This is a very sophisticated, complex process and whiskey you're bringing us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll tell you, the color was the first thing I noticed.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh,
yeah.
Like that deep, really nice amber.
Oh, yeah.
And normally when we see that, and I don't want to bring it up again, but the creamy mouthfeel.
Yes.
It's a good thing.
Yeah. But it's a viscosity.
Yes.
It's gumption.
Gumption. Yeah. I love the gumption's my new favorite. I'm going to start using that.
No, but it's the nose. It's almost what, okay, this is, I'm going to go with an Oscar on it. The nose to me, have you ever popped a firecracker? And then it's the remnants of like the end of the firecracker.
Sure, yeah.
Like
yeah.
the gunpowder residue?
Yeah, like the gunpowder residue.
Yeah. I can get that.
I mean, and what that is, right, is that's coming from the influence from the sherry casks because it is so heavily sherried. A lot of sherries will have like this really deep, and some people love it. Some people don't really like it. But you'll see that sometimes in port and sherry, maybe in Madeira, but you'll have like this kind of sulfur kind of quality that'll come through a little bit that helps like round out the entire experience. Yeah. Sometimes it can kind of be perceived as smoke. None of these again are peated or smoked at all. I haven't even really dipped the toes into, we could spend a whole podcast talking about our maturation program. We're actually using, these are 500 to 700 liter casks. Industry standard is around 200. Most of our maturation are 225s to 400 liter. And that's just for our used oak and our new oak, right? We're going to get into new oak with our rye, but our program is a really, really dynamic and expensive and diverse portfolio from ISC, where we're actually purchasing from their wine or world cooperage, much more expensive, not only charred, but toasted as well. The heads are toasted. So we could spend a whole podcast talking about our maturation, and we barely dipped our toes into it because really what you're finding here is a lot of grain, a lot of fruit, and that heavily sherried influence, which is what we wanted.
Well, and it's funny because you say ferment, and that's exactly what it is. Almost like if you've ever had like a apple from a moonshine that's been sitting in like a thing of moonshine, that's exactly what I get from this. It's old fruit.
Yes.
It's not new. It's not that sweetness of it. It's that old, maybe dried.
Almost plummy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Think like dark stone fruit, red wine reduction, cigar box, humidor.
Yeah.
I mean, and,
oh my God,
old book bindings. Absolutely.
Sulfur in a good way.
Yeah.
Can you imagine this with a cigar?
Oh, good Maduro.
It's a component without it feeling distracting.
Yeah, I think it balances the line because like you said, we've had
plum and
sherry cask aged bourbons and whiskeys before, and they tend to be very, very fruit forward.
Yeah.
And it loses a lot of the character of what makes a whiskey a whiskey. This, I think, actually does a great job balancing
absolutely.
It. Like you get, I get the sherry, I get the the deep red, the plum, the red wine reduction, but it also still, to me, when it sits on the back of my tongue, it's absolutely a whiskey.
Yeah,
and it's absolutely a high proof whiskey.
Exactly. Yeah. And this one, I mean, just I'd be real with you. If I walked up on this on the shelf, I'd be intimidated by it, by the darkness of it, the color of it. I think out of the three that we've had so far, this is the one that if I have somebody who is a long term whiskey bourbon drinker, this is the one that I would hand them out of all of them, only because it has that leather, that old, that that bootstrap feel to it with the nose, the flavor, everything. And I just love hearing it while sipping it while you're talking about it, because it just brings it forward so much more. Yeah. But to your point, it's this, the evolution on this one goes even further than the last one that we had in the point of it's exactly how, as it is. It tells you, the bottle tells you what the experience is going to be. Mm-hmm. And very rarely do you have that experience with anything that tries to be different. It's almost like they overmarket it, and then you taste it and you're like I talked about, like Beyonce's
bourbon. you just dumped a bunch of fruit.
I haven't had it yet.
It's she ages it in her wine.
That's
her wine
barrels, yeah.
And you taste it and it's just flat. It's the experience isn't there. This, from the description on the back of the bottle, is everything that I think that you wanted it to be, as far as keeping the grit, but also having that elder flavor from the barrels, from that cherry.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
I'm down with it. And okay, so I messed up on it. I poured us in our clean glass for this one. And before we switch to the rye, I want to go grab it. But while I do that, you guys go ahead. Let's talk about your rating. I'll be right back.
Go for it, Oscar.
This one was interesting. I like to consume.
You're the end user.
I like to consume the product.
He's a cartel member.
Yeah.
A well-versed consumer.
I think you guys are doing a great job with the sourcing of your materials and your flavor, because it comes out with in the profile of your spirits. It's sometimes when we have those sherry cast finished, whatever, they're either in your face and you don't even know what you're drinking, or it's an afterthought. This one, it's just, you know what you're drinking, but it stays and it's well-rounded. It's not like you were saying, you hate the staves, you hate all that stuff. I do as well.
Yeah.
Don't flavor it. Just let it be and let it.
Yeah. Don't dump shit into it and just hope that
it comes out
unique.
Good.
It makes you different. Yeah.
Right. That's nowhere near even touching this flavor. Yeah. I like it. And, the higher proof is part of my profile. It kind of travels into my nasal cavity after I drink it. That does a really good job of that. I'm going to give it a solid 3, maybe even a 2.8. It's a good pour. Mm-hmm. I like it.
What are you thinking, JMO?
So we talk all the time about part of the reason we like to drink bourbon is because of how it makes you feel. Right. Mm. And whether or not, we talk about all the time, like, can you have a good conversation? Cause we've had some bourbons where, you know, we'll have a conversation and it's like, eh. And then we'll have some like, man, that was, it added to the experience.
Yeah,
it aided it. Right. And I think with this one, have you guys ever watched Black Sails?
No,
the show? Familiar. You have, right? Cool. So Black Sails essentially is this pirate show about Blackbeard. Really good on Showtime. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this brings me to a place where like I would be one of said pirates on leave in the Caribbean at a little shanty drinking something like this.
I like it.
You know what I mean? Directly from this surly old bartender. Well, like it's a whole experience.
You hit it. You hit the nail.
You know what I'm saying? Like, but it's an old world experience.
Boom. Yeah.
And to your point, and I get this really resonates with me now, is there were sweeter palates back then because they drank a shit ton.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you can't have something that is like just straight ethanol. So you had to have something that people would enjoy because you could sell it. And I could literally see myself, you know, with an eye patch and a parrot.
Yeah.
No, it's, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know how to explain it. Like,
right,
that's
where
my head.
When you say old world, not old bourbon whiskey world.
No, old just world, old world like in general. Like the conquistadors of old world.
That era.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah. I mean, they had a lot of fortified wines they were producing back then, right? And so the byproduct was, we need to be able to transport this liquid. They were transferring a lot of what they were distilling into these casks. And then the byproduct of it is you have these really grainy, fruity.
Yes.
And shelf stable, if you will, or ship stable.
Yes, ship stable.
And so you could carry these around down literally and figuratively. And so you would end up with flavor profiles that are like this, really big, really intense.
A lot of earthiness. What's the price on this bottle?
So this does jump up to about $125. So okay. we're jumping up in I guess another echelon of what maybe the industry now would call like a luxury category. North of 100, I think, is what now the industry is calling like a luxury category. Mm-hmm. So again, that might sway people from going at it. But again, at 59%, it holds up really well to water and ice, and it continues to evolve. You know, I'm still getting some of that, like that nice like cigar wrapper and like some of that stewed fruit. Right? If you think, again, I always think about the idea of like cutting up some like strawberries and plum,
like, said, like old, like leathery,
a little bit of red wine,
making it down or something, you know?
Yeah.
All right, Jamie, what's your rating?
2.8.
Yep. I'm going to sit right there with you guys. I think I'm going to give it a solid 2.7.
Yep.
And to your point, to what both of you said, how you describe this as an old world whiskey, that for me, coupled with the fact that this is an experience with a whiskey spirit that I have never had. I've never had a nose that when I first smelt it, I went, wow, this is old. Mm-hmm. Like, this is like leather. This is a real experienced spirit. Then to have the taste of it, and it doesn't hit you in the face.
It's not gimmicky.
Yeah, it's not gimmicky at all as far as like, oh no, I'm sweet. And that's, we do rosé, so it's going to be sweet like a rose. No, this is from the depth of the color of it, the experience of the nose, the direction that you're taking it, that all plays into this for me. And in all reality, $125 for the experience, because at the end of the day, in a saturated market where everybody's trying something different, to get something like this for me, where from the nose to the sip, it is a totally different experience from anything else that you have. I think that $125 is worth it, especially to share it with people who respect what has gone into it.
Yeah.
100%.
It's good for beginners, but it takes you through a journey for people that know what they're drinking.
If somebody, I would feel confident bringing this to a 65-year-old gentleman who's been drinking bourbon his entire life and go, hey, I want you to try this just so you can experience it, because he would try this and go, wait a second. And then to explain to him, like, this was made in the way that it used to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The reason that we have what we have now in whiskey and bourbon is because of things like this. Mm-hmm. I think there would be a level of respect for it that the price point wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
Good.
100%.
Yeah. And that's like, honestly, one of my favorite things to do, is almost like, get a group of people together and go in and buy the bottle, split it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. That's the beauty of commerce, is that no one's going to say, hey, you four guys, you can't buy a bottle of whiskey.
Yep.
You can't share that. No, that's actually the best part about it, is that that's how you can sometimes acquire unicorn releases, It's like, man, that new Weller release, like can't split
but
that.
But
that
maybe that's how this club came about.
I'm so
excited.
Yeah.
I mean, this
for me, like I have buddies that come out and go camping with me every summer.
Mm-hmm.
And last time we had the Dexter, we drank Dexter and that blew me away last year. This year I'm going to bring this.
Yeah.
And 100% because
we rated Dexter super high. Yeah. Just so you know,
And I'm going to bring this one because to be there with my friends, to have the experience of sharing this, it's exactly what I think, like you said, this bottle is meant for.
You can teleport to a different time. Is kind of like the fun experience.
Black Sails, telling you.
Yeah.
Also go watch it.
Black Sails. Okay, I'll look it up.
All right.
It's so, not like a finished in a rosé. It's a finished in a rosé. Jack Sparrow, Black Sails.
Yeah, it's not a rosé all day.
Awesome. Yeah, it's not rosé all day.
It's like a wise the rum gone.
If there are any, staunch single malt consumers, collectors, whatever, old Glendronachs or Mortlocks, if anybody's familiar with those producers, you would see some like shadows of that in some of their older releases that are heavily sherried, tons of fortified wine influence.
Again, you think single malt, you're going to get an in-your-face spirit.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's just this strays from that so much. It's good.
Yeah.
This
took us probably, I don't know, close to 8 weeks to blend, Because we knew there was such a meticulous process because we're a very hands-on blending team. And so we're interacting with every single cask and deciding whether this influence should be together or if it should be apart. And so we actually, this last year at our distillery in Waco, we have a visitor center. You can go there. We release a lot of whiskeys that are only available there. And it's mostly, not to be selfish, it's really to try to protect the market.
Sure.
And maybe we'll only have something that's a single barrel or maybe a 2-3 barrel blend, and really it'd be unfair to release it to the world if only one bottle made it to Colorado.
Right,
that's really silly. I mean, maybe it could work, but So there was another cask that was part of this Sherry Solera program that we have on our fourth floor, and it was called Vino de Calor. We separated that out because we felt like it wasn't adding. And by diluting that experience, by burying it in here, we thought it didn't do any justice. And so as a standalone, there is a release that we have at the distillery called Vino de Calor. And that is the Sherry style. And it's like tons of orange and deep fruit as well. And that's only available at the distillery because we didn't want to bury it in here. We wanted to separate it. So that's that hands-on experience of blending that we have when it comes to Falcone's releases.
Guys, this guy's good at marketing. I want one now.
It looks like we gotta take real estate serve on the rocks on the road.
Just follow us back.
I mean, I've never been to Waco.
Charlie and I'll show you around.
I bet you there's not snow there.
Yeah.
So I'm
no, 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 no. Yeah. Charlie and I walked out of the hotel. We were like, what is this? What do we do?
Yeah, you gotta miss
it. What do we do?
Shit about your Sorrels, man.
No, yeah, I know. Yeah.
All right. So everything that we drank up to this point, everybody, has been single malt. So as you heard earlier, I went and grabbed different glasses because we are moving on to their rye option.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to go ahead and introduce and talk about it, I'll go ahead and get it poured out.
So yeah, we're jumping back into the world of American whiskey style, but in classic Balcones fashion, this is theoretically not going to taste like maybe any
like
rye that you've
rye.
Had before.
Yeah.
And that's because of a couple different things here. This is affectionately called Texas rye, bottled in bond. So it is minimum 4 years old. This is actually the first release where we're tasting something that's matured exclusively in new American oak, right? In order to legally be rye, mm-hmm. it must be new American oak. This release we launched in a year ago. Charlie's helping me with my facts here when it comes to the launch of this. So this is our new core release to the rye. We have had a rye whiskey that was out in the market. It was not bottled and bond. But we were maturing stock and we had an opportunity to say, hey, we're going to blend this from an individual season, truly January to June, in a specific window of time that was at least 4 years or older. It's at 50%, so 100 proof. So we're coming down just a little bit on proof here, but it is extremely aromatic. We leave it towards the end because what you're probably picking up now, and that's actually a very small portion of the mash bill. This is 100% rye. It's 100 proof and 100% pot distilled, right? So this is probably unlike any other rye that maybe we've experienced before.
The nose is not
rye at all. No.
So about 91% of the mash bill is Texas raw rye, which is relatively new to the world in the category of available grains. But it has a really beautiful cereal quality. It has a really beautiful, almost like fennel kind of quality. But the fennel, rest of the mash bill, when we were designing this about 7-8 years ago, we have a huge love and affection for beer. We make beer at the distillery, not on our whiskey equipment. We have dedicated beer equipment that is adjacent to our whiskey making process that we sell only on site. And so we said, hey, we have an opportunity to do something with some grains that we knew of and were aware of. And so the other roughly 9% is roasted crystal and chocolate rye from Weyermann's in Germany. So it's kind of built like an imperial stout mash bill.
Yep.
But there's a really lovely balance there to where you're going to pick that up, right?
You
probably picked up that earthiness, a little bit of chocolatey, tobacco,
it's
espresso.
The almost gave me like a banana.
It's got the dryness of a rye, but it doesn't have the flavor profile.
Have you taken a sip yet?
No.
So take a sip and tell me, like, let it go through and then tell me what you feel.
I'm just blown away by the nose.
Yeah.
Definitely chocolate. Like it first punches me in the face with chocolate. And if you know me in my personal life, you know that I'm I eat an obscene amount of chocolate.
Nice.
I love chocolate, that 100% like.
But it's like baker's chocolate, tobacco,
it's almost
dark
like
chocolate.
It's dark chocolate. Yeah, it's not milk chocolate.
Yeah,
it's dark
like that
chocolate.
Raw cacao.
Yep.
Not that milk chocolate.
But again, this isn't like, you know, let me make sure to stress it for folks that can't join us today. We don't flavor anything. There's nothing flavored. Incredible. There's no sweeteners, no sugars, adjuncts, no byproducts that we're adding at all. We don't know how to do any of that. This is purely grain. Great fermentations, fantastic distillation, really high quality casks that are aiding this entire experience.
Do you the chocolate sits on the tongue, right?
Yeah.
Like it just.
Yes.
It sits there.
It's like, I don't know if you guys remember the cinnamon challenge where people would like put cinnamon and cough it up. Like if you've ever had just like raw cacao, like you're making hot chocolate and you put cacao and you have to put the sugar in. That's what I get. It's that earthy, deep. Mm-hmm. Chocolate like the nut. Like, it's not chocolate when you think of a candy, but the actual earthly chocolate taste.
Yeah, because it's a low, it would be like a low sugar content cacao nib. This starts wandering towards like a Mexican chocolate, Mexican hot chocolate, kind of quality, which is kind of fun.
Coffee at the back end too.
It's very similar to like a really really good coffee stout.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, because I get a little bit of almost like, not, I don't want to say like an oatmeal grain, like a grain, but a sweeter grain, like an oatmeal type of grain.
Which, as we've seen, right, theoretically, as we've seen, as we've navigated through this portfolio here, we want to highlight that grain. We don't want to bury it. We want it to be a part of the entire conversation.
But it's that oatmeal with that chocolate, like an oatmeal stout. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I'm getting.
So many ryes. I know for us, we've recently been on almost like a rye kick.
We have.
We've gone through some ryes.
Oh, that's fun.
It's not... Ryes to me have always been, hey, I'm gonna suck the moisture out of your tongue first, and then I'm gonna give you some of a flavor. This is still maintaining that oily, that smooth on the tongue. Mm-hmm. You get the bite and the crispness from the rye, but then there's a flavor evolution there that I've never experienced with a rye.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And we did, what was it? I mean, even the
whistle pig, right?
Yeah, the whistle pig that we had.
Was that a 15-year rye?
Yeah, 10.
10.
And it was complex. But
it's still,
it
evaporates.
Exactly. Yeah. This one, again, like, if you are a fan of coffee, I don't know if you guys, have you ever had,
there's
a coffee liqueur. Yes. I can't think of what it is, but that's, if you've ever had a coffee liqueur that it sits.
Kahlua?
No. It's legit like coffee.
Like Mr. Black?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Like that. That's what I get on the back end. Yeah. But the evolution from the spice, the little bit of that ethanol feel, then the spice. But then you go chocolate, sweet, and then sits with that.
There's a old fashioned recipe that I absolutely love that uses nitro cold brew.
Oh yeah,
this would be fantastic.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm okay. I don't really get.
What
lot
are you
of
reading
coffee.
Over there?
I'm just like making notes.
Okay, I was gonna say
crazy note guy. I love this.
I'm just serious about it.
Yeah. Well, I get that chocolate, that cacao. Mm-hmm. But obviously, I have a different palate, and I've had different foods. I'm getting more of a tamarind, guava, salted watermelon, mango, chili sucker kind of.
There's a lot of
evolution in there because it's almost all the same. Mm-hmm. There's this like salty, sugary chili powder that we use in Mexico, that to put on like watermelons and guava, Jamaica and stuff like that. It kind of goes that route with the spice. But it's not sweet and it's not spicy, like hot. Mm-hmm. It's a little
more savory.
It's savory. Yes. And, but it hits like that tamarind kind of sweet tang.
Mm-hmm. It is a very chewy rye. Like, it is not
like fruit leather kind
of
realm for me. It's good. It's all good stuff.
Thank you for taking the route that you did with these.
Yeah.
Because starting with number one, I was like, this is a little light. I don't know.
Can you imagine if we started with this?
No.
You would be thorough. You would be upset if we
would
have
kicked you out.
Yeah.
We would have kicked the baby was like, what are you doing?
Even with the proofing, you kind of just started us light. It was good. We're in the morning and then took us to the top and you dropped us off.
No, and honestly, that was good. I can see what you guys are doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me is the most important because so many different companies now in the saturation of the market are trying so many different things to put themselves outside of it. But I love the fact that you're staying true to the process, but then emphasizing it with your grain. And we had Heaven Hill.
Grain to glass.
They just did grain to glass.
Oh yeah, they've got the new grain to glass.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, and we drank through that line.
Yeah.
And I could tell their
care,
their direction and their care. Exactly. Yeah. You could tell that they're actually partnering with research firms to do it.
Yeah.
That's exactly the experience that I'm having here. Is as you explain it, the flavor that's coming through the experience, the nose on the last two bottles. Like I've never had
very unique.
I've never had a nose experience like that with that we did with the last two bottles. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's you were explaining it to me as I was doing it, but even just sticking my nose in the glass, I felt something in my brain go, wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a whiskey like that or a spirit like that in such a saturated market, that's something special like that, please, you know, and like Oscar said, we're not sitting here. We weren't ready to be like, oh yeah, this is amazing, but you earned it throughout this entire tasting. 100%.
What's the price on the rye bottle?
So Bottle and Bond is it 50? Yeah,
right. That's right, $50?
Around 50 bucks.
Yeah, 50. Yeah, yeah, we're bad at economics.
All right, no, yeah.
that's actually okay.
Well, I was gonna say, I don't know how to rate this bottle.
Yeah,
I know how to rate this bottle.
Yeah, yeah. All right, I mean, the fun thing we did It's a very explosive and dynamic experience. Neat, yeah. But this is also one that with a little bit of vermouth, it makes a killer Manhattan.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right? Because you kind of got You think about when you're building maybe a Manhattan or old fashioned, right? Like maybe some orange bitters, mm-hmm. some vermouth. Did you just mention an old fashioned?
Yes.
Yeah. With like the nitro.
Yeah.
You kind of got that baked in, which was like a really aha moment when we were done with it. It was never baked or built around that. It was just like that. Wait a second. Mm-hmm. Because like we drink neat, right? Hello. We drink neat almost exclusively, but this turns out it's like, wow, this could actually make a really great cocktail, which is cool.
Yeah.
And when it comes to a Manhattan, I think a Manhattan, you could use an okay rye as long as you have a really good sweet vermouth. This has some of the qualities of that good vermouth that you don't really need a really good vermouth. This will take care of it. The vermouth brings what it brings. I think this would make a great Manhattan.
What are you guys thinking on the operating?
I want to go first because I want to say something. This may be controversial, but I personally love this. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know if somebody that is a diehard rye whiskey fan would like this at all.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just something that when people love rye, and it's a very specific palate, and a lot of times because most ryes are very, very similar, which is why I like this, because it is different. Mm-hmm. I'm just looking at it from the eyes of a consumer. Like, if I see this on the shelf and I go, okay, I'm buying a rye, and then I taste it, like, I'm going to go, wait a second. Yeah. And you look at the label, you're like, what did I just taste? Mm-hmm. Me personally, 2.3.
Wow.
And I mean, yes, part of that is influenced by the fact this is $50, and I would absolutely drop $50. Like, I look at this and I look at something like, we talked about gimmicky whiskeys, right? And bourbon. So Travelers by Chris Stapleton, that's 45. $5 extra, all day, every day.
Oh, yeah.
No questions.
This
asked.
Doesn't hold a.
No questions.
This isn't a. We talk
Travelers
about,
kind of mutes out towards
no,
the
end. No, but I'm just saying, like, you have in that price point.
I see what you're saying.
There's a lot of just. Everything kind of tastes the same.
Yeah.
This is different enough that I would all day, every day.
All right. So you're sitting 2.3?
2.3.
Oscar, you want to take it?
2.75.
Why don't you add another numeral in there? Like a 2.758.
3.1.
2.
We're going to round up to 2.76.
8.675309.
Round up 2.76.
2.76.
Because of what you said earlier, it's not your traditional rye, but that is okay. It's still really good. I think we kind of said that we were going to have rye in its own like subcategories because they're different in their own way. Yeah. But a rye, when you say, okay, this is rye, you want that spice in your face, kind of it hits you. This doesn't do anything in that realm, but it brings all the good parts of it. And I mean, I kind of feel guilty for giving it 2.75. I should probably have given it better, but I think it's in the price point. I mean, we just had a rye, and they're big name, big price. I'll pick this one up before I do that one all day.
I think for me, it's...
It's a lovely, and I appreciate... I have a big appreciation for you guys now because, again, I had Rumble.
Yeah, you had Rumble. Yeah,
that was the only... Yeah. And you said that was experimental. I was like, okay, I get it now.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's like, man, I have such an appreciation for your distillery. I really do.
I think for me, it's we've drinking through, like I said, we're closer to 80 different spirits that we've drank across the board. And this is one of the only ones that I feel like gives me a different experience drinking whiskey and rye.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, in a market that is so saturated where everybody's trying something different, the fact that the experience of drinking these to me played into the actual taste and the tasting overall, plus the direction that you want to take it. I'm sitting right there with Jameson at a 2.3 because the fact that you can be traditional with how you do it, you're staying true to the grain. You're legitimately not adding any gimmicky, let me put a stave in here. Let's do a little extra sugar or whatever it is. You are making this from scratch with the respect for the process, but then providing an experience that I have not had with any other rye or whiskey. So for me, that's why just across the board, I would say that if we left it, like if this was a normal episode and we were just drinking blue, the and what was the full name of the blue again?
Baby Blue.
If we were just drinking Baby Blue and this was the first one, I would have been like, I'm a little hesitant to experience the rest of the lineup.
Sure, right. Sure.
But the fact that as we went, the experience just got better. Mm-hmm. The purpose of what you're doing and how you're doing it showed on throughout. I definitely think that Baby Blue is your introductory. Mm-hmm. So if you're new to whiskey, if you're new to drinking bourbon whiskey, get the Baby Blue, drink on that for a month, enjoy that, sip on it, then go through the rest of this line because the experience that you get from it that I've had is different than anything else. Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for putting the love and the respect that you have into this. Yeah. Because it shows in the experience overall, 100%.
So, but if you do buy that Baby Blue, and you end up buying another 100% corn, you're not gonna have a good time. Baby Blue is unique, good, very good tasting 100% corn whiskey. Yeah.
I like it. Well, Alex, thank you so much for taking the time.
It's been awesome.
Brave the weather that you're not used to. Yeah. Come out here.
I'm just gonna say, leather soled shoes in this.
You know, we're braving
just
it.
Be very careful.
We came here for y'all. So,
you know. This is a wonderful experience. And if you guys are ever swinging through again and you want to come back on, please let us know. Because
absolutely.
100%. Thank you, seriously. Because you gave us an experience today, not just a tasting.
Yeah.
And I value that over everything because we've done whiskey tasting. We've had explanations done. Mm. But the literal experience of the tasting that you gave us just through starting with Baby Blue all the way through.
Yep.
Couldn't have paid for that experience. Yeah. So thank you so much, Alex, for being here.
Thank you.
Your knowledge, if you would have told me you were the creator of all this and you're the only one that the chemistry is all yours, I would have said, wow, I would believe it.
Well, I mean,
your knowledge is great.
Thank you. Kudos to y'all for this platform. I genuinely think that this is actually a really cool and immersive, like dynamic, hospitable experience and environment, even for myself, right? Charlie and I do this a lot and have for a lot of years, and some of them are great. Some of them are mediocre, but I feel like this is actually a fantastic platform. It doesn't feel it feels like we're just chatting.
Yeah.
Right. Which is what we're doing.
Exactly.
But it doesn't feel like I forgot there were cameras.
Oh,
I forgot that.
That's awesome.
So I feel like this platform, like what y'all have done is really unique. So I encourage y'all to keep doing this.
I appreciate it.
Being open-minded is like the best thing that we could do with this, with this industry.
Absolutely.
Ourselves as producers, as consumers, as people that are, right? When we have folks that visit the distillery, I always tell them, you're actively participating and helping write Texas whiskey tradition and history by participating in, you know, encouraging ways. Positive, iron sharpens iron. We talked about that earlier. But that activation, bridging the gap between consumer and producer is more important now than it ever has been.
100%
instead
agree.
Of this like, we never get to meet maybe someone at Buffalo Trace or, you know, at these like longstanding, beautiful producers. So I think this is a really cool platform.
Yeah.
And hopefully the folks that follow y'all and listen and, you know, appreciate y'all as well, because this is cool.
Thank you so much.
Podcast of the people.
Yeah. Podcast of the people, baby.
Guys, I know this is a little bit different than our normal standpoint, but again, one thing that we really want to do is add value. And whether that is in the bourbon, whiskey, spirit space, or it's in the real estate space, this is why we do what we do. Because at the end of the day, getting the experience to get the information from the horse's mouth, from the people, is the most important element, whether you're talking about real estate, bourbon, whiskey, spirits, because you get to see the emotion, the feeling, the experience behind it. Mm-hmm. And if you like this episode, please let us know, because Chris has been so open about giving us the opportunity to do things like this. And that's one reason why we partnered with the Rouge, is because Chris understands and respects the direction that the spirit industry is going, and understands that having the experience is more important than just drinking the spirit.
Yep.
And on that note, guys, you can come into the Rouge, and they have tasting events. They have like this all the time. Chris, all their bartenders are extremely knowledgeable across the board. And I guarantee you, if you come in and you say, hey, I want to have something a little bit different, I want to have an experience with it, they will guide you in the direction like this, like we had today. And you can have all of these bottles here at the Rouge. And again, just like you said, one of the benefits of having a bar that has knowledge and experience related to it is that you can come in and you can have a taste. You don't have to go out and spend $100 to $120 on the bottle. You can come in, you can tell them what you want, the experience that you want to have. And these bottles will range anywhere between $15 to $24 a pour here at the Rouge Wineberg Bistro.
Awesome. Yeah.
So you can't go wrong.
That. No, you can't go wrong.
Yeah. Especially for the last two that we had.
Right.
Yeah.
Guys, please come out, give it a try, because those bottles blew me away experientially.
Yep.
When it comes to it. But on that note, Alex, please tell everybody, where can they find you? Where can they visit you? How do they learn about Balcones?
Yeah, no, thank you again. You can find, and follow along on Instagram and Facebook. Balcones Distilling has a pretty robust channel for social media. We're actually going through a major change in our website. So our website is going through a major update right now, which is fantastic. We're digging behind the scenes on that. You can visit our distillery in Waco. Usually want to fly into Dallas or Austin and drive up.
Yep.
There's a tiny little airport in Waco, but, we are open, Tuesday through Saturday. We do have public tours that you can sign up for online. We have gift shop with bottles, flights, cocktails, beer. We have events throughout the week and the month, so you can visit us and take a full hour tour that ends, culminates in a tasting alongside our tour guide. So please come visit us in Texas. You can find our bottles all throughout Denver and Colorado as well. This is one of our top priority states. There's a huge love and affection. We were talking about, obviously, Yellowstone, but Western Americana. There's mm-hmm. a love between Texas and Colorado as well. Mm-hmm. So you can find our bottles all throughout the area. Obviously, you can find it here at Rouge. This is a really cool space, really cool opportunity. Ski your way on in and grab a drink,
yeah.
warm up a yeah. little bit, and then defrost.
Rent a dog sled. And,
but on that note, guys, thank you so much for coming out. Thank you for spending the time with us. Remember, you can always reach out to us, RESOTR@themilehighperspective.com, or give us a call.
720-584-3361.
And we will put you in touch with the Rouge. We will put you in touch with people like Alex, so you can have these experiences, ask these questions, and you can always trust that we're going to give you honest reviews and have the best people on. And on that note, cheers, everybody. We'll cheers. Catch you on the next one.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Cheers. Alex. Cheers, guys.
Thank you for tuning into this special episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. If you'd like to see us do more of this kind of content, let us know in the comments. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere that you listen to podcasts. For the video version, subscribe to our YouTube channel at Living in Colorado, The Mile High Perspective. And to stay up to date on all the events going on at the Rouge Wine and Bourbon Bistro, visit their website, therougewinebar.com.